Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
If you think about what the church is to be and what the gospel is all about, the more messed up the world gets, the greater the possibilities for a work of the Spirit become, because God works in the midst of these crises, and the whole gospel is about bringing hope to men who are in sin, bringing light into a dark situation.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the book of Hebrews. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on Hebrews chapter 8 in a message titled, The New Covenant. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
All right, so we are picking up as we make our way through this epistle to the Hebrews. We're picking up, as I said, we're picking up in the 8th chapter today. And let me just refresh your memory, just remind you of the background where we've been so far. The writer there in the 7th chapter has just been telling his readers about their great high priest according to the order of Melchizedek. And as you know, as you've been following with us through, the author has wanted to speak to them about this important matter of the priesthood of Christ and this unique priesthood according to the order of Melchizedek. And there in the 7th chapter, he really finally dives into that. And then kind of the main thrust of what he says there is that Christ, who is a priest according to the order of Melchizedek, he is able to save to the uttermost those who come to God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for them. And so as we come now to chapter 8, he's going to kind of summarize. He wants to make sure that everybody's getting what he's trying to communicate. And that's an important thing. And so he is going to kind of summarize the gist of what he has been saying to them. So picking up in chapter 8, verse 1, now this is the main point of the things we are saying. We have such a high priest who is seated at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in the heavens, a minister of the sanctuary and of the true tabernacle, which the Lord erected and not man. Let's go on through verse 6. For every high priest is appointed to offer both gifts and sacrifices. Therefore, it is necessary that this one, speaking of Christ, also have something to offer. For if he were on earth, he would not be a priest, since there are priests who offer the gifts according to the law, who serve the copy and the shadow of heavenly things, as Moses was divinely instructed when he was about to make the tabernacle. For God said to Moses, see that you make all things according to the pattern shown you on the mountain. But now he, speaking again of Christ, has obtained a more excellent ministry, inasmuch as he is also mediator of a better covenant, which was established on better promises. So he says, now look, this is the main point of what I'm saying to you. And the main point is about the superiority of the priesthood of Jesus. And so here he just comes right out and makes it crystal clear that we have a high priest who is seated at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in heaven. So he's saying, look, this is what I'm trying to tell you. Our high priest, Jesus, according to the order of Melchizedek, he's so far superior to Aaron, because remember, they're struggle was a consideration of returning to the old system. So his main point is that Jesus is greater than all that preceded him. He's greater than Aaron and all of the high priests that followed. He brought in a new and a better covenant than the one that was established by Moses. And here also in the passage, he says that the priesthood, the sacrifices, the tabernacle, these were all earthly copies of heavenly realities. So what he's saying is, look, the reality, the heavenly reality has come. These things were all temporary measures that were pointing to the future and were pointing from earth to heaven. And now all of that has been fulfilled with the coming of Jesus, the Messiah. So again, he's urging them not to loosen their grip on their faith in Christ, but to hold fast and to continue to trust him all the way through. And then he states here that Jesus is the mediator of the new covenant that was established on better promises. So ironically, the Jews had lost sight of the fact that God was going to establish a new covenant. Now, 600 years earlier, through Jeremiah the prophet, God spoke and said to them that the days were coming when he was going to establish a new covenant. But, you know, the Jews just were so tenaciously holding on to this old covenant when God himself said, I'm going to establish a new covenant because of the inadequacy of the old one. So here they are 600 years down the road. And, you know, the irony is that they weren't anticipating this. They weren't expecting this. And that was part of the tragedy of where the people were at the time that Jesus came. They had just settled into tradition. They had settled into complacency. It's like, hey, this is what we've got. We've got this law and we're comfortable with it. And this is the end all in our relationship with God. But the fact of the matter was, no, that wasn't the case at all. They should have been expecting a new thing to happen. And that was their great mistake. They weren't expecting it. And so when it happened, to a large degree, they missed it. But you know, there's a lesson for us in that as well. We need to be careful because the same thing has been repeated over and over again in church history where the, you know, God does something and people enjoy it and they're blessed by it, but then they kind of just settle into it. And then it becomes a thing of the past. It becomes a memory. It becomes something that, oh, we're so, you know, happy that God did that back then. But there's no expectation of God doing something in the future. And we need to be living with both thankfulness for what God has done in our past, but also with anticipation of God still wanting to do things in the future. I believe that there's still a good future for the church and for the people of God, despite what is going on around us. But as a matter of fact, if you think about what the church is to be and what the gospel is all about, the more messed up the world gets, the greater the possibilities for a work of the Spirit become, because God works in the midst of these crises, and the whole gospel is about bringing hope to men who are in sin, bringing light into a dark situation. And so Jesus, the author says, is the mediator of a new covenant. And now here in verses 7 through 13, he tells us about that. So let me read that to you. For if that first covenant had been faultless, then no place would have been sought for a second. Because finding fault with them, he says, behold, the days are coming, says the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day when I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt, because they did not continue in my covenant, and I disregarded them, says the Lord. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, says the Lord, I will put my laws in their mind and write them on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. And none of them shall teach his neighbor, and none his brother, saying, know the Lord, for all shall know me, from the least of them to the greatest of them, for I will be merciful to their unrighteousness and their sins and their lawless deeds. I will remember no more. In that he says a new covenant, he has made the first obsolete. And now what is becoming obsolete and growing old is ready to vanish away. So 600 years earlier, God through Jeremiah said, I'm going to make a new covenant. And he is going to make a new covenant because The first one was faulty. The first one was faulty. What was the fault of the first covenant? Well, on the side of the covenant, the problem with it was that it was external primarily, so it couldn't really affect the heart, and it's the heart that needs the change. But the real problem with the first covenant, and we read it right here, because finding fault with them. You see, the problem with the first covenant and the reason why it could never accomplish what was needed, and that was, you know, ongoing intimate fellowship with God, was because of man's sinfulness. Because that ongoing intimacy and fellowship with God was contingent upon, you know, man's sin being dealt with, but man's inability to live rightly and to attain to the standard of the law caused the law to be really a failure. And so finding fault with them, the problem was in the sinfulness of man. As we pointed out before, Paul says in Romans 7, the law was holy, just, and good, but the problem is with us. The law is spiritual. I am carnal, sold under sin. So that was the problem. Now, the law, of course, was a contract that God had made with the people of Israel. And it was a two-way contract. God had, you know, certain commitments and obligations that he would meet, but those things were conditional. They were contingent upon the faithfulness of the people. And so to put it in, you know, kind of legal contractual terms, immediately the people breached the contract. So, you know, it's like the contract is signed, God gives the covenant there at Sinai, and okay, here we go, we're committing ourselves to this covenant, we're committing ourselves to follow the Lord, and immediately they breached the contract. And even though they did that immediately, God still allows this thing to go on for a long, long time, and he works, you know, despite their breach of the contract, but he says, I'm going to make a new contract. Now, think of it. If you go into a contractual situation with somebody and they breach the contract, that pretty much ends your obligation, and you're probably done with that individual. It's not like you're going to go into another contract or covenant with them, normally speaking. But here's where we see the amazing heart of God. God says, you know, they messed up. They broke the contract. I disregarded them. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to make a new covenant. And the amazing thing about this new covenant, as we're going to see, is it's one that they're not going to be able to mess up. That's the really glorious thing about the new covenant. So let's talk about the new covenant. Well, the new covenant was established by Jesus through his death upon the cross. So that's how the new covenant would be established. It would be established through the death of Jesus. Now, you know, the passage here where the quotation, it's a direct quotation from Jeremiah chapter 31, verses 31 through 34. The Jeremiah text doesn't give us the details about how the covenant is going to be established, but the author is going to go on as he goes further into the ninth and half of the 10th chapter to show that the covenant, the new covenant, was established similarly to the old covenant. The old covenant was established with blood, the blood of animals. The new covenant is also established with blood, but not the blood of animals, but the blood of God's Son. And so it was through the death of Jesus upon the cross that the new covenant was established. And in anticipation of his coming death, Jesus symbolically established the new covenant with the bread and the cup at that final Passover meal that he had with his disciples. And you remember reading this, Matthew, Mark, and Luke all recorded. I'm going to quote from Luke. There it says that Jesus, he took bread, he gave thanks and broke it, and he gave it to them saying, this is my body, which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. Likewise, he also took the cup after supper saying, this cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is shed for you. So in anticipation. Now, this is the night before Jesus goes to the cross. So the covenant wouldn't actually be enacted until Jesus died upon the cross, but symbolically, it was enacted there at what we commonly call the Last Supper. Jesus says, this cup, as he passes it around, he says, this is the new covenant in my blood. So that was the symbolic act that brought the covenant into existence. Now, I want you to notice as we're looking at the passage here, the God, he's speaking of this covenant having to do with the house of Israel. I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. And then verse 10, for this is a covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days. So the covenant that we're talking about here was a covenant that was to be made and actually is yet to be made with the house of Israel and Judah. Jesus made it that night there with that handful of followers. They were all Jewish. They were all from the house of Israel or the house of Judah. But what's happened is we as the church, we have preceded Israel into the covenant. So the covenant was intended, you know, for them to be the blessing, but we, the church, the Gentiles, who the Jews had no idea were even going to be brought into favor with God. We've not only been brought into favor, we've been brought into the covenant that they have yet to come into. We preceded them into it. And that's what has happened. Now, they one day will enter in nationally. Israel will one day enter into this covenant, but we, the church, have preceded them. We have been there from the beginning. This is the covenant that God made that we, as believers in Jesus, are a part of. And so I want you to see the unique features of this new covenant. And so, first of all, we note that the new covenant is internal and affected by the Spirit. Notice what God said, I will put my laws in their mind and write them on their hearts. So the difference between the old covenant, one of the differences is the old covenant was predominantly external. Remember, it was a covenant that was written on stone. It wasn't written on the heart of a person. It was written on stone. That's external. That's outside. And so a person was to look at those commands written on stone and then seek to conform to them. So the old covenant was external. The new covenant is going to be internal. It's going to be God putting his law in the mind and upon the heart. Rather than externally upon the stone, it's engraved upon our hearts. Ezekiel gives us a picture of this in the 36th chapter, verses 26 and 27. Listen to what he says. God is speaking through Ezekiel, or Ezekiel is speaking on behalf of the Lord. He said, I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit within you. I will take the heart of stone out of your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you will keep my judgments and do them. So this is the same covenant. It's just described in slightly different terms. Really, it's more descriptive. God says, I'm going to take that heart of stone out of you, and I'm going to put a new heart in you. That's what happens. The heart of stone is a heart that's resistant to the will of God. God says, I'm going to take that out and I'm going to put a new heart in you that's tender, a heart that's sensitive, a heart that's inclined toward my will. And then he makes it clear, I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes. So this is what we've entered into. We've entered into this relationship with God through this covenant that is internal. And it is affected by the Spirit. It's something the Spirit does. And so Paul describes it like this in writing to the Philippians. He says, it is God who works in you both to will and to do his good pleasure. So you see, it's from the inside out. And oftentimes when we're, you know, looking to describe to people what it is that we're talking about with this relationship with Jesus that we have and so forth, we describe it like that, don't we? We talk, you know, it's about God doing something on the inside that will then manifest itself outwardly. In the days of Jesus, the religious leaders, Jesus said to them, their problem was they made everything look great out on the outside, but their hearts were full of corruption. He said, outwardly, you're like whitewashed tombs. They would wash the outsides of the tombs and they would decorate them and they looked nice from the outside. But of course, you open the tomb and they were full of corruption and dead men's bones. Jesus said to the religious leaders, he said, that's what you're like. You look good on the outside, but inside you're full of all of this corruption. What God does is he comes through his Spirit in this new covenant and he does a work inside of us. He does it from the inside out. He puts a new heart in us with new desires, new interest and passions and things like this. And we find that our spiritual life is working from the inside out rather than the opposite. So the new covenant is internal and affected by the Spirit. Secondly, the new covenant is primarily relational. It's primarily relational. And we see that in these words, I will be their God and they shall be my people. That's the whole thing that God was wanting all the while. He was wanting the relationship with the people. But under the old covenant, really the big message of the old covenant was exclusion. The old covenant was essentially saying to people, you can't come close to God. And so there was a sacrificial system that had to intercede. There was a priesthood who offered the sacrifices. There was a tabernacle. And there was, remember, a veil. And there was a holy place that nobody could get to because of the sin issue that the first covenant was never able to really deal with. The relational thing that God was seeking was not really available under this old covenant. And the beauty of the new covenant is that it has brought us into the relationship that we need, that God intended from the very beginning. You know, all that Jesus did, all that happened when he descended from heaven and came to earth and took upon himself human form and ultimately went to the cross and died. You know what all of that was for? It was also we could have a relationship with God, but it was also so he could enjoy a relationship with us. You know, we think quite often, you know, when it comes to the relationship with God, we sort of often think of ourselves, maybe not even consciously, but we think of ourselves as the ones who are longing for this, desiring this, pursuing after this.
And now let's join Pastor Brian and Cheryl in the studio as they share about this month's resource. It's a book titled By Searching by Isabel Kuhn.
Cheryl, tell us about Isabel Kuhn.
Well, Isabel Kuhn was a missionary, and she was with China Inland Missions, which is now Overseas Missionary Fellowship. But she served there from 1928 to 1954 with her husband, and they served the Lisu Indians in China. Now, the interesting thing is a lot of people think that every missionary was born into a Christian family. Well, that's not Isabel Kuhn's testimony. She was born into a very secular family. In fact, her mother was an atheist and did not have any regard for God at all. So Isabel Kuhn talks about her own struggle to come to know the Lord and actually to begin to walk with the Lord, and then the call on her life to go into missions, and then the call on her life to marry her husband, John. And if you read By Searching by Isabel Kuhn, you will get very interested in her life and you'll want to read all of her books. And I think that she wrote somewhere around 10 books. I've read all of them. I love all of her books. But a great place to start out is By Searching, which is an autobiography of Isabel Kuhn's journey to faith and the call of God.
Great.
Again, this month's resource is a book titled By Searching by Isabel Kuhn. You can order the book by searching by going to our website, brianbrodesen.uk. Scroll down until you see the photo of it, and then click on the donate button. When you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you the book by searching by Isabel Kuhn to encourage you in your faith as you seek after God. It's our way of saying thank you for your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com/466-5365 or by writing us at Back to Basics Radio, P.O. Box 647, Bromley, Kent, BR14WQ. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the book of Hebrews. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.